In this chapter, we find that King Ahab of Israel is succeeded by his son Jehoram. He is not as bad, and he reforms the worst features of his father and mother's idolatry. Perhaps because he saw the judgments that came upon Ahab and Jezebel, he's moved to do something about the provoking worship of Baal in the land of Israel. Nevertheless, he still worships the calves that the earlier King Jeroboam had set up. So it was only a partial reformation and only really a partial turning to the Lord. Proverbs 16 and verse 7 says, "When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him." Now, if Jehoram's ways had pleased the Lord would have made his enemies to be at peace with him. But because his ways didn't please the Lord, we find pretty soon after he's come to the throne, 2 Kings 3 verse 5, "It came to pass, when Ahab was dead, that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel." And if you go back to verse 4, you'll see that this king of Moab, who was a vassal of Israel, brought as a tribute 1,000 lambs and 1,000 rams. Sorry, no, 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool each year. Well, this revolt and the loss of all that was too great. And so Jehoram raises an army to put down the revolt of Moab. And he also asks Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, to help him. Verse 8. And he also says, sorry, verse 7, Jehoshaphat agrees to go with him. And verse 8, he asks Jehoshaphat which would be the best way to go against Moab. And Jehoshaphat says, "Go through the wilderness of Edom and come at the land of Moab from the south in a surprise attack." And it will have the added advantage of the Edomites, who are subject to Judah, being also enlisted in the war. So you've got Jehoram of Israel, the king of Edom, and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and their armies now going against Moab. The trouble was that in going through the wilderness of Edom, the water supply or the water source that they were depending upon, they found had dried up. And so, verse 9, "There was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them." And it seemed as if the thing was doomed to disaster. Weak through thirst and tiredness, the Moabites would easily defeat them. Or they might even be thirsty and die. However, Jehoshaphat seeks a prophet. Verse 11. "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord?" And thankfully, Elisha has gone along with Israel and the king. And so they all go down, the three kings go down to Elisha to implore his help. And Elisha's words to the king of Israel, Jehoram, aren't very encouraging, are they? Verse 13. "What are you coming to me for? Why don't you go to the prophets of Ahab and Jezebel and ask them for help?" But anyhow, in the end he agrees. And these words in verse 14. "As the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee, nor see thee." It was a good thing that Jehoshaphat was there, wasn't it? Because he was the only reason Elisha would do anything about this situation. Jehoram was an apostate, the king of Edom was a heathen, it was for Jehoshaphat's sake that they would all be saved. And we have here a striking lesson regarding the Lord's people, we who have to live among the ungodly. Jehoshaphat with Jehoram and the king of Moab is a little type and picture of the fact that we are in the world but not of it, and we have to live here among the ungodly. And we can take Elisha's words here as the Lord's own words. Were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee, nor see thee. It's the role of the Lord's people in this world. These are God's words because Elisha is a prophet, isn't he? Speaking from the mouth of the Lord. John Trapp, the Puritan, puts it like this concerning these words: were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. So saith the Lord to the world of wicked ones, concerning his saints and servants mixed among them. Now, we are painfully conscious of this world around us in which we have to live. Unbelievers, ungodly, and sinful. And we are affected so much. We wish that we didn't have to be here. We wish we could be surrounded by the Lord's people in a godly, gracious atmosphere. But we cannot. And we know we have to be here. And it pains us, it grieves us so often. But the encouraging thing about these words is that it shows us how the Lord regards us in our particular situation. I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, and if it were not for him, I wouldn't look toward you nor see you. And I want us to explore this about the way the Lord looks upon his people living among sinful mankind here in their particular circumstances, and what the Lord says of us and how he feels toward us in relation to everybody else. And the first thing we can learn is this: that in our situation, the Lord knows us. The presence of Jehoshaphat. Now there he is, among the heathen Moabites and the apostate Israelites, caught between the two, right there. And the Lord knows where he is. And dear friends, he knew it. Jehoshaphat wasn't in Judah, he was in Edom, among these other people. And he knows where you are, and he knows where I am, and he knows exactly where you have to live and move and have your being, who you have to rub shoulders with, who is all around you, outnumbering you as one of the Lord's people. He knows it. He knows exactly where you live and your location. Proverbs 3, verse 33, he blesseth the habitation of the just. Well, if he blesses the habitation of the just, he must know where that habitation is, and that his own people live there, in your house and in my house, wherever we are. He never overlooks us, you see. He sees us among our neighbours. Either side of us, we might have godless persons, no fear of God before their eyes. And within their four walls they do terrible things that provoke God. And if you knew about it, would provoke and distress you. But he knows your house
and your dwelling and where you are and what goes on in your four walls as you seek to live for him and honour him. And he knows those among whom you have to work and those among whom you have to study perhaps. And in 2 Peter 2 verse 7, the Holy Spirit through Peter notes the fact that when Lot was in Sodom, that just man, his soul was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. Well, the Lord knew about that, how Lot was feeling as he had to listen to their talk and witness their ungodly, wicked deeds and almost breathe in the polluted atmosphere of that sin-soaked place. His righteous soul was vexed from day to day. Well, the Lord knew that. And he knows when we react in ways we do, when we wince at the things we hear, as we're riled and made to feel indignant. We feel so shocked, perhaps, or so depressed at what goes on around us. Well, you see, the presence of Jehoshaphat, the Lord knew that he was there in that place and speaks about it. A very encouraging way the Lord describes us is in Malachi 3 verse 17, where he speaks of that day when I make up my jewels. And you see, in this present world at the moment, the Lord's people are jewels scattered across the whole face of the world, in all the countries, sometimes very thinly scattered, aren't they? Sometimes concentrated a little bit more, but each one of us, one of his jewels. And you see, when you find a jewel, you find something precious, don't you? Something rare, something of beauty. And that's how the Lord looks down upon each one of his own in this world. Compared to them, everything else is just so much material. But my jewels. A jewel is always a gift, really, isn't it? You never find a jewel on the ground or just hanging around somewhere. A jewel has always been given in the form of a present, a special present. And you see, we jewels are the Father's gift to his Son in the covenant of grace. And Jesus received the gift, and Jesus spoke about they whom the Father hath given me. And the Father's gift to Jesus and all that Jesus did to make us redeemed and right with God and fit for heaven, how valued we are. The presence of Jehoshaphat. God looks down on this world and he sees one sparkling there and another glittering there and another beautiful one there, and so over all the world, chosen, donated to the Son, redeemed by blood, made the Father's possession in that special way now by virtue of redemption, and being polished and fitted and prepared to shine in glory. But what's the rest of the world of men compared to his jewels? He even knows where his true church is in difficult places. In Revelation 2 verse 13, the letter to the church at Pergamos, and Jesus says, I know thy works and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. Pergamos was a dreadful place for satanic activity, dark and evil and horrible. But I know your works, says Jesus. I know all you've done for me in that place, and where you dwell, even where Satan's seat is. My jewels. So you see, the Lord has an eye for his own, and he knows them all exactly where they are, and he prizes them, prizes us
greatly. Now, this is made even more encouraging by the fact that Jehoshaphat should not actually have been there, should he? It's amazing that Jehoshaphat should have agreed to this alliance with Jehoram and this campaign. If you turn to 2 Chronicles 18 and verse 1, you'll see that he had been in the past guilty of an alliance with Jehoram's father, Ahab. 2 Chronicles 18 verse 1. Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honour in abundance and joined affinity with Ahab. And after certain years he went down to Ahab, to Samaria, and then agreed to go against Syria at Ramoth Gilead. And when he came home, having just about escaped, in chapter 19 verse 2 of 2 Chronicles, Hanani the prophet said to him, "Shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from the Lord." Having done that, and he hadn't learned, had he? And now, when Jehoram the son asks him for a similar favour, he agrees to it. Although Jehoshaphat had a good heart, he was either very, very naive and slow to learn the lessons of his mistakes, or he was too weak to bring himself to say no. And sometimes we need to be strong enough to say no, don't we, when a principal is involved. And so he finds himself between the Israelites and the Moabites, Edomites rather, on the way to fight with the Moabites, and in dire straits. And yet, in spite of this disobedience and this foolish step, the Lord still says, "I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat." In other words, you see, God didn't leave him. God didn't hand him over to suffer the consequences of his own sinful foolishness. The Lord was still with him and still acknowledged him. And dear friends, a backsliding believer or a foolish believer outside of the will of God is still one of the Lord's jewels and still as highly regarded as ever, in spite of what they've done. And thank God that that is true, because otherwise where would you and I be if the Lord had left us to our wanderings and our strayings and our backslidings from him? Oh, the presence of Jehoshaphat, even in a place where he should not have been, in compromise. Still, the Lord knew and acknowledged him and was going to do something for him, because what's happening is part of the Lord's way of delivering him and chastening and restoring him. And how wonderfully the Lord works, even at our worst, dear friends. It's nonetheless true that we are who we are, and the Lord knows where we are, the presence of Jehoshaphat. "He restoreth my soul and leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." So the Lord knows us where we are. Let's look secondly at the fact that the Lord loves us. "I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat." Now, isn't that lovely? In other words, the Lord, through Elisha, is saying, "He stands out from you lot. He is there. Everyone else can be ignored, but he is mine." Psalm 147 verse 11. "This is true of you. The Lord taketh pleasure in them that fear him, in those that hope in his mercy." Do you fear him? Do you hope in his mercy? He finds pleasure in you for that. And you see, he regards your presence where you are. He's got eyes for only you. I remember years ago, when I sometimes took a turn at collecting the children from school, and when they were very small, and in the early years you're a bit anxious about them, and you stand at the end of the playground and you look toward the door where they all come streaming out with their little lunch boxes and things, bless them. And I remember looking at the door and seeing all these children coming out, little boys and girls. Any one of them would have been nice to have taken home, and any one of them would have been lovable. But of course I only had eyes for one particular little boy or one particular little girl. And I knew as soon as Andrew or Emma came through the door, he is mine, she is mine. And you see, a father's eyes can spot his own among all the rest. He might feel benevolent and tender and kind to all the rest, but all the rest are not his. But he takes pleasure in his own. And you see, the Lord knows everyone else in this world. After all, he made them. And the Lord is good to all, and his tender mercies are over all his works. He is a faithful creator. But he takes pleasure in them that fear him, in those that hope in his mercy. And are you those who want to please him and are afraid of grieving him? Are you those who hope in his mercy that he will answer your prayers, give you grace, come in for you, be everything to you you long for? Well, the Lord takes pleasure in you as one of his own. I regard the presence. And dear friends, it's a wonderful regard that the Lord has for you. That word regard means literally to lift up or to accept or to advance. And it's a picture of special esteem and favour. It's used of Naaman in the next, couple of chapters, chapter 5, verse 1. It's used there. Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honourable. And in the margin, if you look at the margin, lifted up or accepted in countenance. In other words, Naaman was thought of so highly by the king of Syria, so highly as one of his favourites. He stood high in the pleasure of his master the king. And you see, I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat. The Lord regards you in this way with such special esteem and favour. We know, of course, that our standing in this respect is purely by grace. But the Lord highly regards us because he sees us in his Son, in the same righteousness, adorned and clothed in the same merit and beauty. And we're accepted in the Beloved, and we're loved in Christ. We stand out, you see. He regards your presence. He doesn't regard the ungodly in that way. He shows kindness in a general common grace and benevolence, but not the special favour that he has toward his own. Now, the people of the world don't regard us, of course, do they? They go on with their swearing and taking the Lord's name in vain and telling their crude and vile jokes and boasting and glorying in the things they do and are hoping to do and living purely for this world and the flesh and their master the devil. But I regard the presence of my people among them, he says. And God bears in a long-suffering way with the others. 1 John 3 verse 1. Behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him
not. Did they understand who Jesus was while he was here? Did they appreciate him as the Son of God? Did they know all about where he had come from, what he had come to do, where he was going? Of course not. And neither do they know about us, except what we might be able to tell them. And until the Lord opens their eyes and brings them out to know this, these same things that we do, the world knoweth us not, but the Lord regards us. And you see that this makes all the difference in a time of trouble, the Lord loving us, because it meant that Jehoshaphat could call for a prophet and the word of the Lord by him, and therefore had a God to whom he went in that trouble, whereas all Jehoram could do was say, the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. And because he was ungodly, all he could think about was God angry and in a superstitious kind of way, just waiting to destroy them all. Ah, but Jehoshaphat could go to the Lord through his prophet Elisha. And that's a very wonderful thing. I don't know why Jehoshaphat didn't do this kind of thing earlier, when he was first presented with the proposal to go up with Jehoram against the Moabites. Why didn't he pray then? But at any rate, he's praying now, as it were, and he's doing the right thing. Better late than never. But this makes us stand out, doesn't it, dear friends? Being regarded by God, we can go to God. I remember when Aaron Lewis was at the cot side of little Joanna those months ago. You remember we were praying for her and for them, and he was praying to the Lord over what he thought was his dying little baby daughter, and finding great strength to pray submissively and commit her to the Lord and say, it is the Lord, let him do what seemeth him good. And other parents were there with babies in similar situations, and one of them came up to Aaron afterwards and said, does it really make a difference what you're doing? And Aaron's able to tell them, yes, it makes all the difference. And he's able to witness to them, and of course he stood out, you see. The Lord regarded his presence, and the poor ungodly were at their wits' end, not knowing what to do, where to turn for help and comfort. But Aaron was able to witness, wasn't he? The Lord loved him. He regarded the presence of that godly young man in that situation. He regards us where we are as well. He loves us as his own. What a great comfort this is. And so, as you find yourself in company that you would rather not have, woe is me, for I dwell in Meshech and in the tents of Kedar. Company you'd rather not have. Words going on around you. An atmosphere. The presence of sinners. But know, you see, that the Lord knows where you are right there. And he loves you right there. And he is with you right there. And the last thing is this. The Lord uses us. It's interesting, isn't it? The way it's put in verse 14. Were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee, nor see thee. The presence of this one saint meant that others were blessed. If he had not been there, what would have happened to the rest? The Lord used Jehoshaphat as the reason for the Lord to bless those who didn't deserve a blessing. And isn't that true? That the presence of God's saints, he knows where they are. He loves them there. He uses them there. Think of Joseph working for Potiphar in his house in Egypt. And what do we read? Genesis 39 verse 5. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Potiphar didn't know what a treasure he had, did he, that day when he picked Joseph in the slave market and bought him and brought him home as a servant, he didn't know what a treasure he brought home. Because he found that Joseph was doing his work faithfully, prayerfully, the Lord was with him, and things went so well that somehow the whole household went well. Because the Lord's Joseph was there. You know, employers don't realize how much they owe to Christian employees. They don't really. And if you could see this, you would discover, I'm sure, that many a firm, factory, office, company, business has gone all the better because there have been Christians there where the Lord has known them, there where the Lord has loved them, there where the Lord has used them. He's blessed the whole thing for their sakes. If it were not for them, the Lord wouldn't look toward them nor see them. How blessed a country where there are many of the Lord's people as its citizens and as its workforce. Even Sodom, dear friends, the Lord said if there were but 10 righteous persons in Sodom, he would have spared that wicked city, wouldn't he? Sadly, Lot and his family didn't add up to 10, and so it wasn't spared. But even so, the Lord ensured that Lot and the family, as many as would, were taken out before it was destroyed. But my dear friend, what sparing mercies to a nation because of the godly in the midst of the country. How do we know how long-suffering the Lord is to Great Britain? Because of all his jewels, his own people, faithful local churches dotted all over the place. Sadly now not so numerous, but nonetheless faithful to the Lord. Hasn't it been the case that when the Lord's people have prayed and stood in the breach between an angry God and a guilty nation, they have turned away the wrath of God like Moses by their prayers? Lord, have mercy upon our nation. Lord, bless our Prime Minister and government, our royal family. Lord, be merciful to our land. In wrath, remember mercy. Were it not for the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee, nor see thee. Were it not for our presence, and the presence of the remnant in the land, the Lord might well not look to us, nor see us, and may have destroyed us long ago. If our land had been bereft of the Lord's people. The Lord uses us, dear friends. And just one Christian is enough to make a difference. Ye are the salt of the earth. And a few grains of salt have a tang that when it's in contact with the meat halts the process of decay and putrefaction. And the presence of Christians, a few sprinkled Christians, sting the consciences of godless people and keep them quiet in their filthy language sometimes, and restrain their behavior from being what it would otherwise be, the salt of the earth and the light of the world, bringing the light of the gospel, the message of hope and salvation, into the darkness of despair, where people who are without hope and without God in the world, and parents like parents who are with Aaron, who didn't have a God to go to pray for their poor mite, whose little life was ebbing away perhaps through meningitis, without hope, without God in the world, but the light of the world, to tell people that there is such a God who loves sinners and who has given his Son to save and who welcomes returning sinners through Jesus and gives them salvation and comfort and hope and is a covenant friend to all such who come to him like that. The light of the world. Philippians 2, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. Someone has said that on a dark night, a clear night, with all the twinkling stars, someone has said the stars don't shout, they just shine. And the darker the night, the more conspicuous the shining of those heavenly bodies. And the darker the times, dear friend, the more conspicuous our witness, by dint of the fact that we are there and shining for Him. We don't have to shout. We'll talk if we have opportunity. But the great thing is to shine and be the light. People can see the difference that being Christians makes, because we know the Lord. And you know one more thing in the way the Lord uses us? The very presence of His elect in the world secures the continuance of this world. Because Matthew 24 verse 14 says, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." But the end won't come until the gospel goes into all the world to gather out all elect persons. And you see, there are elect ones given by the Father to the Son as jewels, who've not even been born yet, probably, and have yet to be born again and brought out through the preaching of the gospel. For all we know, of course, they could all be in existence in this world at the present time. It could be that the last ones of the elect are in existence now in the world and are going to be reached by the gospel in our generation, and then the end shall come. We don't know. Or it could be generations and centuries to come still. We don't know. But this world will not end. Jesus will not come again. For the resurrection and the judgment and the new heavens and the new earth, until the last elect one is called out. And then shall the end come. So in a way, you see, the presence of elect ones secures the continuance of this world, doesn't it? And so it shall be until that hour comes. This world doesn't know how grateful it ought to be to the Lord's people, how much it owes to those whom the Lord knows and loves and uses. I regard the present. And if it were not for this, I would not look toward thee, nor see thee. Well, dear friends, may we be encouraged and strengthened, and may the Lord speak these things home to our hearts, that we might live more comfortably for Him. Let us sing together hymn 7.